Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that's all about bringing you the most important conversations of the day. I'm Sharad Kutin. It's time to take a look at the week that was, and to help me, I have Annabelle Lee, she's a journalist with Malaysia Kini, and also Lau Chak On, who is editor-in-chief of chilisauce.com. Now, it's a website that brings you the news, but in its own particular fashion. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me. And I said that for a reason. I do want you to, at some point, explain your particular take on of the news of the day, Chak, that in some ways is very different from the style, the more conventional style of reporting that Malaysia Kini, where Annabelle works, does. So, lots of stuff to talk about this week. I want to begin with the former defense minister's offer, it's an offer to the new government that he would go out and hunt down Joe Loh, a businessman implicated in the 1MDB scandal. A lot of airplay, he got a lot of airplay. The question was why? I'm not sure that he deserved all that attention. Annabelle, was it newsworthy?
Yeah, it was newsworthy. I mean, he is a MP still of Sembrong, and he, I guess, offered this to the government in his personal capacity. He was saying that he knew people in China from his previous job, from his previous appointments, and that he could help.
Kalau sekiranya Joe Loh berada di negeri China, secara peribadi saya akan ke China untuk mencari, untuk membawa Joe Loh ni balik ke muka keadilan.
So I think newsworthy aside, it's also important to report on these things to hold them accountable for what they are saying and offering. So, yeah, I think
it was newsworthy. No. Did you think it was news? I didn't. I was convinced this was not a non-news item. I was like, why are credible news organizations giving him so much airplay on a mere suggestion and without asking really important questions like, how was he going to do this? Was he going to go to China, take Joe Loh, stuff him into a vanity case and fly him out?
Unwillingly.
There's actually a bigger question than that, which is, where has he been for the last 3 years? Like, we haven't heard from him at all, you know?
Him being the
Hisham Udin, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, because, not Joe Loh. I mean, Joe Loh's been all over the news, right? And I think that was a newsworthiness. Anything to do with Joe Loh right now is newsworthy, right? Because everyone wants to hear about it. But as for Hisham Udin, I mean, if you, like, go on Google News, search for Hisham Udin news in the last 3 years, it's barely anything. He's been quiet as a mouse leading up to GE14 and after GE14 as well. So the last, most of the stuff that you'll find about Hisham Udin online is with regards to MH370, which is quite strange because MH370 didn't exactly endear him with the Chinese, if you remember, because they had a lot of questions that went unanswered during that time.
Right, Annabelle, do you think that the press was asking the right questions? Okay, people can make an offer. Yeah, and he's not just anybody, right? He is somebody, or he was a somebody. Mm. The question is, what resources, what the legal standing would be? Was this going to be one of those secret rendition type exercises? Weren't there a lot of questions that were just missed out in the reports?
Well, it was, perhaps some questions were not asked. Right, and I think that they can still be asked, right? But I think just based on what Hisham Udin offered, he offered to go to China by himself in his personal capacity, not sent on behalf of Putrajaya or anything like that.
Or Interpol, or any other organization that actually has the legal right to arrest somebody.
But he did offer to go there in person, right? And hit up some of his links, I think that was the word he used, in China, and actually bring him back. I mean, that was kind of like that process. I mean, he spelled out that process for us. But yeah, I agree. I think there must be more questions asked. I think another thing he mentioned was, it was quite funny, I thought. He said something along the lines of, oh, if there are desus, if there are rumors of me going to China, it's on my personal capacity.
Okay.
He was already preempting people talking about him going to China. I thought that was quite funny. I mean, I wasn't there, I have to say. But
when you look at the news and there's so much happening, and you're right, Chak, Joe Loh is the actually headline grabber. I mean, it's not so much Hisham Udin, but Joe Loh. Put Joe Loh in a title and everybody's going to be reading that story. He is clickbait for now. But at the same time, do editors have to be slightly discerning? What do you do with people who are trying to just promote themselves by, kind of attaching themselves to these hot buzzwords or names in this instance? What do you do with that?
It's quite funny because I think now with the MACC going after all the former ministers that we had, right, Maybe Hishimoto wants to be positioned as being helpful. I think as a few people actually pointed that out online, you know, hey guys, you know, look over there, you know, he might be there. Oh, let me help you, you know. But the funny thing was that, I mean, the DOJ obviously, like, identified Joe Lo as a significant part of wanting to be way before, you know, way before the election. Hishimoto was the defense minister back then. Nothing.
But he would claim that, of course, there was no directive from government at that point to pursue this. I mean, he was just in sync with the rest of the cabinet, wasn't he?
But no one from the government is still asking him to go after this. This is on his own volition. If he's such a good-hearted person, then why didn't he do it back then?
Okay, you know, there are related stories, I think, this week that also, you know, caused me to be kind of concerned about the media's sense of judgment, right? For instance, the former deputy prime minister, because president of UMNO, made that unfortunate remark about the earthquake in Indonesia, attributing the cause to God's wrath around LGBTQ issues in Indonesia.
Kejadian di Palu baru-baru ini, apabila ada gempa bumi dan tsunami, dikabarkan bahawa terdapat lebih daripada 1,000 di kalangan mereka yang terlibat dalam aktiviti yang berkenaan. Akibatnya seluruh kawasan itu diranapkan. Ini adalah hukuman Allah.
Now, again, that got a lot of airplay, but was it newsworthy?
I believe it is. I mean, it is important to report what people that we have, you know, voted into power, even in the opposition, I mean, especially in the opposition maybe, we have to report what they say. I mean, they have to be held accountable to their words. I don't think it's promoting their cause or promoting whatever they want to promote. Maybe it is. I mean, if you report on somebody in one way or another, you're promoting their agenda or their cause, but I think it's holding them accountable, really. I think that perhaps is, to me, the bigger concern. I mean, if the former prime minister or, you know, a member of parliament, the opposition leader, says something like that, it deserves to be reported, and widely so. And perhaps maybe with a critical take on it, maybe not word for word, but more than anything, I think it needs to make the news. I mean,
okay,
like, this is crazy.
You take the news and you kind of like do something to it, don't you? You kind of make it sexy, make it a little more assimilable. What are your values when it comes to choosing news that needs to be kind of worked on?
Okay, so I can honestly say that with every story that Chili Sauce launches, we ask, are we adding any value with this? Because basically, my writers have a 2 to 3 day story cycle. So that means that they will take a story that is already trending and then see what value you can add over 2 to 3 days. Whereas these guys, I mean, they have to come up with stories like, you know, straight away like that. So you don't have the time to think about things like, you know, am I adding value? Do I cover this because I'm trying to hold someone accountable? Those are all like instincts almost, you know. Whereas we have to actually decide, okay, we have this story right now. How can we add something to it? And if we can't add something to it, we don't write it.
You know, this question I like to put to most of our politicians, are you adding value? I think that's a really good way of framing it. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me tonight, Annabelle Lee. She's a journalist with Malaysia Kini. And Lau Chak On, who is editor-in-chief of chilisauce.my. Not .com. I made a mistake earlier. I'll correct myself. Very important to do that. .my. Okay. And we're talking about the news that was. Let's move on to actually quite disturbing news. The Center for Independent Journalism had put out a notice some days ago saying a man had been arrested for a Facebook posting with allegations that he had insulted the police following the death of two police officers. This was in Kuantan, which is, of course, the capital of Pahang. He has since been sentenced 6 months in jail. Now, the question is, Facebook postings and your feelings about things, are they criminal? Should they be criminalized in quite this way? Annabelle, you read the news. I mean, were you surprised by this 6 month jail sentence?
I have to say, I did not read the comment that he made, but say it was insulting to the two policemen who died, say it was even off color. I mean, there is a provision in the Communications and Multimedia Act for it. But yeah, it seemed pretty excessive. I mean, one Facebook comment, and for someone to be sentenced to 6 months in jail for that, is pretty crazy, especially if you consider the Pakatan Harapan government is actually working to review and maybe even repeal some of these sections.
So this is section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia
yes.
Act. I think that's something that the Center of Independent Journalism has actually flagged yeah. as yeah. a problematic provision, calling on the minister.
And that was the exact provision they used on this guy, right? And this provision is pretty crazy. I mean, if you look at it, it's a 50,000 ringgit fine for anything that's obscene or indecent or false or menacing or offensive, which is, I don't know when it's the police. I mean, obviously it was not something nice to happen, but whether that warranted a criminal offense, whether that mounted to a criminal offense, I don't know.
Yeah, so, okay, do you know, Chuck? I mean, do you have an opinion about this? The CIJ clearly feels that this was excessive.
We actually worked with the CIJ. Chili Sauce worked with the CIJ on some initiatives a couple of years ago when the MCMC was considering the CMA Act, right? And we actually found out that a lot of people that were incarcerated for various things like the Internal Security Act or CMCA or whatever, right? They were all like mostly royalty related. I think this is the first time it's police related, right? Mm. I don't recall it having been police related before. Mm. So it's a new thing.
Okay, but let's look at Facebook. I don't use much Facebook myself, but and I know a lot of people do. People make really
you don't
personal
use Facebook.
I do. I don't I'm committed to it. I don't post much. Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Sharad. Anything. It's Sharad Kutun. That's my handle. The issue really is that people make offensive remarks about other people, the color of their clothing, their hairstyles, their weight, or the lack of it, whatever it is, right? Now, if we went after everybody that hurt somebody and offended somebody in this kind of way, we'd have literally millions of people, line up.
Jails
in front
are not
of
big court. Enough.
Yeah, jails are not big enough.
Yeah.
So the choice of focusing on this man and the insult against a police officer suggests that that is the reason. It's who you insult, not the insult itself.
Yeah, so that's the problem with all these laws, right? They're so vague, in the descriptions of what is legal and what is illegal, that it allows interpretation, and the interpretation is always selective. Like what you said, loads of people are making these comments online. Mm. Why single out this guy?
I mean, politicians.
Yeah.
The former prime minister and his wife are the subject of the most vicious attacks, on social media, right? And I would challenge anybody at this table if they haven't themselves contributed to that. But the question
No,
you haven't. Okay, you're very good. You are responsible. The question is, if you have a law like this, should it be applied universally or not at all? I mean, is that the kind of choice that we
I think social media is its own police already. It's a scary place. You do something wrong there, you're going to get vilified, right? And that's enough. You don't need to send somebody to jail for it because 20 people are probably saying the same thing that he said somewhere else on Facebook or on Twitter or on Snapchat or whatever. So why pick it out on this guy,
Okay. Interesting. Okay. I mean, if what we're talking about is kind of conduct on social media, then I think there's a big discussion about this, in Germany and in Malaysia and in other places. Some people say it should be the social media sites themselves that actually govern and kind of police itself, right? What's okay, what's not okay. In this case, it wasn't hate speech. I mean, it doesn't sound like it was hate speech. I don't know the comment, but just based on the law that they used, it was, something either obscene, indecent, or menacing, or false, or something like that.
It's hard to tell without knowing the comments.
So the question is, it's a test. There must be a genuine test, as a CIJ puts it, a genuine test of the harm that a remark can make, right? We are very concerned about hate speech.
Yeah.
That incites others to commit violence.
Yes.
But in insulting somebody, are you committing a real act of violence or inciting others to do so?
But also in this case, I mean, since we talk about politicians, maybe people holding public service, people like the police or the military or something like that, I would argue that there is a these people are more should be more open to criticism and should be more open to critique, maybe even insults. I don't think anyone is actually protected from insults. I think the thing that is protected is reputation, and then we have defamation for that, right? So mere insults or something obscene, I mean, there has to be a bigger cause in that.
also have a bit of confidence, lah. You know, I mean, just because someone insults you doesn't mean that you have to get offended, right? Let me look at Mahathir. Mahathir basically said, "Hey, feel free to insult me. Please do not arrest anybody that insults me because I can take it. I'm fine."
Yeah, you know? I think this insult thing we use as sedition against the sedition.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Now, this, I mean, we've been using the CMA Act against it, and I think it's too much. It's too much.
Okay, in sort of trying to wrap up this conversation, we now have a man who's going to be spending 6 months in jail. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's going to have a chilling effect on others? Do you think from now on, at least when it comes to making remarks about the police force, people are going to hold back because they know that there are a lot of thin-skinned people in the force?
It's a very valid point to bring up, and probably yes. I mean, I cannot foresee it not having any sort of impact. People are going to share this on WhatsApp and whatever. My parents are probably going to tell me, like, you know, don't talk about stuff on Sharad's show, you know.
Too late.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's going, yeah, oh yeah, it's too late.
But what about you? Do you think there's going to be a chilling effect? Or do you think, as the Center of Independent Journalism suggests, the police force should actually be investing in its own reputation by improving community relations, not going after people who criticize them?
Well, hopefully when the law is gone, or this section is gone, it won't have a chilling effect. But just based on this one case, it's not good news.
Okay. Annabel Lee with Malaysia Kini and Lau Chak on, editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my. We'll be back very shortly. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. In the studio with me are Annabel Lee. She is a journalist with Malaysia Kini, and Lau Chak On, who is editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my. That's ChiliSauce.my. I'm saying very deliberately because I got it wrong in the first segment. Now, getting it wrong, it might be quite an innocent thing.
Nice segment.
Okay. But reputations are very important to, at least your personal reputation is something that I think you legitimately you have the right to protect. Just this week, Utusan Malaysia and TVT Tiga apologized to Anwar Ibrahim, who's the leader of PKR, for something they did in 2013. Many people don't even remember what happened in 2000, with allegations that he'd used money to influence the Attorney General's chambers as well as judges. Now, this is a major defamation. So the question is, when you apologize, is it too little too late? I mean, is our reputation such that once the damage is done, an apology does very little to kind of eat away at the false image it says it created of the person. Chat.
I guess it depends on how many people saw the apology, you know. And right now the apology is making news, so I think it's okay. I think they shouldn't have done it in the first place, obviously, you know. I think that's a responsibility of every news organization, right, Annabelle? I mean, yeah, we should get things right the first time, you know. We shouldn't throw out things like this anyway.
So there's a punitive dimension to this, right? So you go to court, you take somebody to court, they apologize, and they have to do it in a public fashion. They might have to pay you some money. There might be damages for legal costs and such. But I'm interested in that other dimension. You know, when things are out there and you've said something enough times,
right?
How much can you really take back with an apology? I mean, don't we live in a world where, especially for politicians, you know, they're at the receiving end of so much? What really ought to be their strategy in combating this? I mean, clearly going to court is one thing.
I mean, that's why you have a law for defamation, right? You can sue for damages, you can sue for, in a sense, vindication for this. And I think, yes, it was 5 years ago, it was a huge allegation. It wasn't, you know, it was a pretty big claim and false claim, right, now that we know. And I think an apology is important. I mean, yes, it's 5 years on, it's dragged them through. I mean, that one report on TV3 and that one report, Utusan, has dragged them through 5 years of legal suits and lawyers' fees. They still have to pay, I think, him $130,000 to Anwar, and they have to make all these public apologies for something they did 5 years ago. I think it's great. I think it reminds media organizations that they have to be accountable for what they say. I mean, if someone comes up with an allegation, it is basic journalism ethics that you get a right, you ask the person who has been alleged for their response.
But there's no criminal punishment here, right? It's purely just a fine. It's a civil
suit. The question also is
it
for the
criminal.
The question of, well, there's criminal defamation too, right? The issue here, of course, is, you know, the reputation of the media organizations. Now, when media organizations come out and apologize, do you think they win credit from the public? Or are the public going to be saying, oh, I don't remember you doing this, but now that you've told me you've done this, maybe you're not as credible as I thought you were?
It is. It affects their reputation. I mean, defamation suits, well, the law has been used differently in many different ways. But yeah, I mean, when you have to say sorry for something you reported and you've been sued for defamation, none of that, I mean, no media organization wants that. And that's precisely why you, with claims and especially really, really, huge claims like this, you always get the person's response. You always get the person's reply. That's basic.
Right. So the right of reply for those involved in the story.
I still remember the first time that we got a legal letter was last year. And it was for something that we wrote about a new kind of a cryptocurrency that was available in Malaysia. And I think the Kelantan government was investing into it. And that cryptocurrency owner called us up. They sent us a letter first saying, you know, cease and desist, this is factually wrong and blah, 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 that sort of thing. And I was concerned because 3 years, I never got a legal letter before, right? So I sent it to this like group of journalists that I have on WhatsApp. And they go like, hey, congrats, you popped your cherry, you know, congrats, your first legal letter, you know. And then we were like, oh, wow, okay, this is that normal. And then I kind of like, then the guy called me. He got my number somehow through a friend. And he tried to play nice. He said, hey, you know, can you just take down the article or, you know, change the article or whatever? And I said, I can, but I can't do it with a threat of legal action because that's an admission of guilt. You know, if you threaten me with legal action and I correct it, that means that, oh, hey, you corrected it. That means you're actually guilty of getting it wrong in the first place, which we weren't. We didn't actually get it wrong.
Oh, you didn't get it wrong. No. But of course, media organizations do get it wrong and they do issue corrections.
Editor's
right?
notes. I mean, that happens, especially when the news cycle is so fast.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, allegations fly around everywhere. There's social media. Sometimes it's difficult to verify things, but I think it's important to reach out at least to the party being, you know, the subject to one of whatever the claim is, to at least get a response. I think that is the least.
There's such a huge pressure nowadays to be the first, right?
Yeah, there is.
So
yeah.
Because of that, you're not necessarily, you don't have the luxury of time a lot of the time.
But it's also very easy to contact people these days. I mean, it's WhatsApp,
that's true.
There's calls. I mean, there's so many different ways.
But, you know, often news comes out in the first three paragraphs. Now, we have, you know, more to come as a way of signaling that perhaps that story, when it's fully written, will be more balanced. But it does often begin with one person making an assertion of some sort and the media going with that alone, right? I mean, so where do we go from now? I mean, and I want to sort of focus, you know, on the response of politicians. You said, Dr. Mathe said, look, fine.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm okay with it. Other politicians may be less secure. Or is it a question of security? Or how secure they are in themselves, Chuck?
No. I'm sorry. You go first.
I don't feel that a lot of our politicians are that secure, to be honest. You know, they were secure in their gilded cages. You know, they had a lot of people. I think Azmi Sharam talked about this at the Kuala Lumpur Festival, where he actually said, like, we have this cium tangan type of mentality where we have to respect our superiors. But our politicians are not our superiors. They're working for us. That's what they're supposed to do, you know? So why is this whole cium tangan, dato or whatever kind of thing going on, right?
So the deference to authority, what do you think of our politicians,
I Annabelle? Don't think it's security or insecurity. I think it's truth and reputation and establishing the facts. So, I mean, regardless of how people feel about things, like if someone has laid a claim against you, I will give you all avenues, time, everything to explain yourself.
Otherwise, you nail the lie. You nail the lie because lies should not be allowed to proliferate, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. In the room, Lau Chak On, he is the editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my, and Annabelle Lee, a journalist with Malaysia Kini. This week, we had a spectacle of unhappy taxi drivers and an equally unhappy prime minister who said that if it need be, he would step down.
Yep.
Right? So a lot of drama out in Langkawi. The question really is, how the media reported it. And I was very concerned about the use of expressions like rude taxi drivers. And I thought that was too judgmental. It wasn't giving enough to the taxi drivers who clearly feel they have to protect their rice bowl. Annabelle, when you watched this thing unfold, because it was quite dramatic, it was the first time the Prime Minister offered to resign 5 months into his tenure, not for any other political reasons, but for the reasons of the kind of emotional response he was getting from his constituents.
Saya nak tolong, tapi kalau tak ada bantuan kepada saya, saya pun tak boleh tolong juga. Ya, saya Perdana Menteri. Saya bukan nak jadi Perdana Menteri. Saya tak ada pesara dah. Orang panggil balik. Sebab tu saya datang. Kalau tak nak saya jadi Perdana Menteri, tak apa. Saya hari ini tak jawab. Tak ada masalah bagi saya.
Okay, I think just going back to the remark, his offer to resign. I mean, if you watch the video, I don't think the Prime Minister, I don't think Mahathir was serious. I don't think he meant it as a threat. I don't think he meant it as like, like a real offer of resignation. I honestly read it as more, he was being a bit cheeky about it. Or maybe he was saying, hey guys, I've come to the table, I'm here, I want to hear what you have to say. Why do you want to walk out on me lah? You know,
Was that the tone?
That was the tone I read it in. And if you watch the video, that was the tone I saw, you know.
Mahathir's tone is quite measured, I have to say. He doesn't really raise his voice or lower his voice that much.
It was more, in a way, he was trying to have a conversation. It was a dialogue with taxi drivers.
When you're saying that the media are kind of like portraying taxi drivers unfairly, is it because they put the word rude taxi drivers together?
Yeah, because they had come to a judgment about the dynamics of in that hall and who was right and who was wrong, who had behaved well and who, you know, didn't have the right to behave in the way they did. So walking out was clearly seen as rude, insolent,
rude.
Disrespectful. Well, I mean, I think it's a question of perspective. And so how does the media play honest broker in describing a scene, not ascribing, you know, values to the actions of those involved? There was a walkout, but if you're desperate and you feel you're not being listened to and you walk out, that's a legitimate act of protest, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel that the unfairness would be to lump all taxi drivers together, you know? I feel that if the Prime Minister is willing to come down and have a conversation with you, and I agree with you on this, that's a special thing, you know?
Come down from his Olympian heights.
Come
down from where?
From Putrajaya, you know, the clouds of Putrajaya. But yeah, I mean, to have a conversation with taxi drivers in his constituency, I wouldn't say it's a privilege. I wouldn't go that far to say it's a privilege. But I would think that it's an act of willingness, you know, to have a conversation.
Well, he didn't come as Prime Minister. He came as Member of Parliament, where people had voted him in, right?
Yes.
Annabelle, am I making too much? Am I trying to defend the indefensible here?
Drivers. I think perhaps the adjective rude was maybe a bit unfair. I mean, that some people see that as rude, some people see that as standing up for your own rights, right? Or, it drew more attention to the issue, so if that's what they wanted, they got it, right? And it's a legitimate response in the spectrum of things that you can do. But I do think that if the objective of the taxi industry is to, you know, to have their you know, woes heard by the government, I mean, the Prime Minister is sitting in front of you and he wants to hear what you have to say.
Your MP is sitting in front of you.
It's kind of shooting yourself in the foot if you walk out. I mean, I think that was at the beginning of the dialogue. In fact, it wasn't even maybe halfway through or towards the end. So that seems a bit strange that you want to talk to the government, you want to have your woes heard, you're staging protests, which is a totally legitimate thing to do, but at the same time, you're walking out on the Prime Minister when he's having a dialogue with you.
So it's not the smartest communication strategy, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, these are people who don't have resources to think through the communicative strategies they need to have at a national level.
I think that's a bit dismissive.
Well, I don't think they do. I mean, how many, these are, I mean, for most times, they might have associations. They're not the most well-resourced, right, taxi drivers. I mean, they don't occupy very high, you know, positions in society. And so I'm actually much more sympathetic to them if they didn't get their communication strategy right. I agree with you. They did shoot themselves in the foot.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm totally sympathetic to what taxi drivers are going through. I just think they shouldn't have walked away. Like, we did an article about how much taxi drivers earn, and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculously low. And the thing is, right, SPAD actually had a taxi driver transformation policy. This is way back in 2013, right? And they said, oh, we want to get like taxi drivers up to middle income. The assumption from that study is that taxi drivers work 29 days a month, 12 hours a day. That's not reasonable. You know, I mean, to get someone just the middle income. We're not talking about like high income or whatever.
Well, you actually published a piece, Are Malaysian Taxi Drivers Really Evil?
Yeah, it's actually a republished piece that was published about 3 years ago.
Well, you haven't answered to that question. And I clearly you didn't mean.
Have you seen social media? Everybody is villainizing them. It's totally unfair.
I don't think you should blanket statement something like that.
Well, so this again is the... So the larger public might be generally negatively predisposed to taxi drivers. Mm-hmm. And we all know they're increasingly smelly, old, and provide bad service. I mean, generally speaking.
Not any more than before.
Yeah, not any more than before. This is why there's no game changer.
More than like the attitude or whether they're evil or they're saints. I don't think Grab here is a saint. I mean, I don't think it's a, you know, me or the other kind of thing. But I think perhaps the issue is this kind of reputation problem that the taxis have. I think we all can agree on that, whether true or not. Whether everybody or maybe just a small, you know, bunch of black sheep.
I think so.
The reputation. No, this is a reputation problem.
It's not a reputation problem.
They need to fix it.
It's not a reputation. It's a system problem. Grab is just a better system than taxis. The review system is better. The payment system is better. Mm. The vetting system might not be better, but they've solved that with the other parts of the system. So as a system, I believe it wins. Mm. There's a legacy of taxis. They still have to do their hire purchase, which is not cheap. Mm. So you just got to like give them enough mileage for them to finish their careers and then move them over to a better system.
The question really is the media playing fair? Is it playing honest broker in a conversation where clearly individuals like Atun Dr. Mahathir have become almost unassailable, untouchable, and the media
true.
Just... that might not true, but
not
the media
true.
Does it. Oh, Malaysia Kini does it, okay. But the question is, can we put them on equal footing and create a conversation between them?
You're right about the sainthood part, lah. There's been a switch after May 9th, right? Where, you know, if we ever write an article that is somehow critical of the government, then we get a whole bunch of liberals coming to our site that look exactly like what BN cyber troopers looked like before May 9th, you know, saying, why can't you just let it be? Why can't you, you know, just let the government do their job or whatever? But it's our job. You know, like you said, honest brokers, right? We have to take a look at both sides and see where we end up.
Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll be back with more on Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Lau Chak On, he's a editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my, and Annabel Lee with Malaysia Kini. She's a journalist there. We've been talking about the media. Now, I know the media is often reacting to what's happening in the now. We've been talking about the week that's passed, but there's also things that are happening next week and beyond, and I'm wondering your take on what's going to be important to focus on. But Annabel, I believe you still want to say something about the taxi story. There's something there that needs to be settled. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is completely legitimate to demand an equal playing field. I mean, in the past, you had different regulations for e-hailing drivers and different regulations for taxi drivers. I think the Minister of Transport, the Ministry of Transport, is trying to sort that out. But that I completely agree with.
And so that's where you're sympathetic to taxi drivers who feel that they've gotten the short end of the stick.
Yeah, that's completely within their rights. But, you know, I'm going to come back to this trust deficit thing, right? There is an image problem, which I think if the taxi drivers and taxi industry is able to address and really convince the public that they're not, you know, that idea we have about them, if they're not that and they can, you know, really make good on that, I think it will be all right. I mean, mobility is something everyone is looking for solutions for. I don't think we don't want to go into taxis because they're taxis. It's because what taxis have been associated with, you know, all the things we've been talking about, right?
And so, truly, they are not evil, Chuck.
Not evil.
Not all of them.
Okay. Let's look ahead. And I know that as an editor of a media organization, you have to do some planning. There are things that are happening. There's the budget next week. Monday, that big boat that Joe Low owns, or used to own, is going to go on sale, isn't it, Annabel?
It's Christmas. I know what I want for Christmas.
Okay.
Just shout out to my parents, friends.
Maybe they should pool their money together to buy Equanimity. And Equanimity, because one of the major symbols of the 1MDB scandal that's going on, is that something that would interest your readers, Chuck?
Like I said, Jolo is gold. I mean, he might not be worth gold now, but to like stories, I think any story with Jolo is going to carry. We actually posted up a poll about what to do with the equanimity, you know, once they found it, right? Yeah. So then we asked that, and then a lot of people basically said like make it into a museum, or what was the other one? I can't remember actually. Make it into a museum, sell it, and a few others. Yeah. So I mean, it is definitely a story.
Okay, it's so.
Not sure how we're gonna cover it yet.
Okay, lightning rod for public opinion. Everybody's got an opinion about it. What else do you think, Annabelle? I mean, you come from not to say that you know chili sauce is not serious. Serious-ish. Yeah. Malaysia Kini, of course, very serious. What are you guys looking at for next week?
Well, the bid for the yacht will be interesting, of course. Budget, of course, is coming up. Yeah, I think we're planning something for that. So watch out for that.
I want to ask about the budget because I think, you know, over the years, budgets have been framed, at least for the general public, as...
goodie bags.
Yes, it's Christmas, come early. It's Christmas, come early, and what's your wish list? Now, is it a sensible way to frame very complex issues of budgeting for governments, fiscal discipline versus needing to provide, you know, welfare and the safety nets that keep a lot of people, not just the B40, but all of us, kind of floating in this country, moving on. Wish list really the way to go? Because it does seem to be the main template for most media.
One, the cultures needs to change. I mean, this whole gifting culture needs to change as well. Budgets are not meant to be gifts, they're meant to be plans, you know, on how to run the country for the next year. How to allocate money, what to allocate money to that makes sense. Not like you do something for me and I do something for you. That's horrible. That's not a way to run a country.
No, I think, budgets all over the world, they're a way to win support as well. I think that's very natural thing to do. All governments do this.
No, there's one that doesn't.
But I think in the past, election budgets have always been the emphasis and the focus because obviously of what kind of effect they will have on elections, right? But I think this time, I think both the finance minister and the prime minister have kind of preempted. It's not going to be a goody bag budget. It's going to be a lot of pain and sacrifice.
They've been trying to manage expectations. Yeah. Do you think it works when governments come out and say, you know, months in advance, actually, don't expect this is going to be a happy budget. It's in fact going to be quite painful, requiring sacrifice on your part. Is that something that people will buy?
It's a balancing act, right? Because you know, the finance minister needs to balance out like market optimism versus like pessimism as well. So you can't just say, oh no, it's all going to be horrible. You're all going to be penniless. You know, you can't say that. But by him saying sacrifice, I mean, maybe one time too many, but still, it's a good thing. You know, expectation management is always a good thing. So it doesn't come as a shock, the market gets into a shock, right? Because at the end of the day, what he's supposed to do is try to maintain the economy and steady the boat. And the boat is rocky right now.
If you look at how Pakatan Harapan and the Prime Minister and literally every Harapan politician has had to defend how they could not fulfill the 100-day promises. They were all saying, maybe we overpromised, but you know, the debt is so bad.
We didn't think we would win.
I'm so sorry. Like, we will try, give us some time. I think they've learned from that mistake, and they know public sentiment and public expectation is something that if you promise too much or if you don't tell them not to expect so much, it's something that will come and bite you back in the butt.
I actually don't remember when the last time the government apologized to the people, like, in the past.
Something they can do.
Okay, so, do you think that... So, the question really is, at this point in time, do you think they're doing their best, as much as anybody can ask of them, to manage expectations?
I think they're doing well in terms of expectation management. They could always be doing better. I don't think anybody would disagree they could do better. But looking at the direction of Malaysia for the last 5 years, I say we're progressing.
Okay. Now, on progress, clearly we've made a lot of progress in the fight against corruption, at least in the high-profile cases. Mm-hmm. That used to be the big story. We're always getting the small fish, not the big fish. Now it seems like every week is a fish fest, you know, and they're big. They're whoppers, right?
Tsukiji fish market, man.
It's always Thursday.
Is it always a Thursday?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's always Thursday.
No way.
I don't know why. I have some theories.
Do you think people will tire of the story of the fight against corruption, Annabelle?
I do not think so. I think everybody knows corruption has been a long-standing problem in Malaysia in many previous governments. And I think now when we see really, really top leaders, former leaders, you know, really facing justice, facing you know, all these crazy, crazy corruption charges, I think... No, I don't think people will tire for it. I think this is what people are waiting for. This is what people you know, want to see whether something will come out of this, whether this will actually shock everyone into not being corrupted anymore. I mean, that is obviously the hope, right? But this thing is nice. I like
it. Okay, Jack, do you anywhere think in the world, going after the bad guy is always a good story, right? You know,
going after the bad guy.
I think the only place where it's been oversatiated. Yeah, which is the big part, right? Because the only place that I feel has been oversatiated about going after the bad guy is the Philippines.
Okay, we're going to have to cut it at that. Thank you so much for being with me this evening. I've been speaking to Annabelle Lee. She's a journalist with Malaysia Kini, and Lau Chak On. He is the editor-in-chief at chilisauce.my. That's chilisauce.my. You can also tell us what you feel about the show by emailing me at letstalk@astro.com.my. This has been Let's Talk. Remember, we're here every day at 10 p.m., only on Astro One.